We're back. I'm Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are talking with Ron Cherno, and we're talking about America in the guise of talking about John D. Rockefeller. I want you to talk a little about his management style, because I think some of that is quite remarkable, that he is willing to trust people, that he requires the best people come work with him.
His management style is fascinating. In fact, we were talking about the way that he, you know, prefigured or invented the 20th century, and this is one of the ways. If you look at most of the moguls from the late 19th century, they were what we would today call entrepreneur founders. And usually your basic entrepreneur founder was someone who was a tyrannical boss because he created the business and owned the business. He felt that he owned the workers and usually would just be a martinet.
And there was lots of labor unrest around that for a century.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a very polarized situation between management and labor and lots of strikes and lots of bloodshed and everything else. John D. Rockefeller, even though he is one of the co-founders and clearly the guiding force at Standard Oil, develops a management style where he will only move by consensus. Every day the executive committee meets at 26th Broadway in Lower Manhattan with this magnificent view of New York Harbor, and they discuss policy. And John D. Rockefeller will not embark upon any major strategic initiative unless there is 100% uniformity. And in fact, we were talking before about the famous thing where he bought up the oil on the Ohio-Indiana border, convinced that he could get the sulfur smell out of it. Well, he was opposed by some of his colleagues for 2 years. He held off on doing that because he could not convince them. Finally, he felt so strongly about it, he said that I will myself pay for the whole project. And at that point, the opponents folded their tents and joined with him. But I find this very interesting because usually the history of any business is the first generation, you have the tyrannical founder, and then you have the second generation, you have a kind of custodial or managerial figure. And John D. Rockefeller actually combines qualities of both. He also felt that by adopting this management style of only moving by consensus, that if there were a few people on the board who were holding out, number one, that if there were any flaws in their thinking, they would find it out by having that kind of deliberation. He also felt that when they finally decided to move ahead, they would move ahead with the most ferocious determination. You know, that it was also a way of building this tremendous, really, resolution to do something, and then they were really unstoppable. They were an amazing group of people.
He was also, I think, it seems very methodical about his own well-being, and very, very controlling about how he spent his time. And part of it, it seems, part of what made it necessary for him to trust other people was that he was not going to spend 14, 16, 18-hour days at the office.
Yeah, actually, his life was a little bit more balanced than one might have thought. He was not as much of a workaholic as one would have predicted.
Oh, describe this. This is really quite astonishing.
The original telecommuter. It's
well,
remarkable.
He claims, I think that there was some exaggeration here, but he claims that even when he was in his 30s, he decided to spend more time with the family and spent a lot of afternoons, you know, home. He loved to lay out roads and garden and things of that sort. He loved to race fast horses. He had a lot of interests outside the office. He also felt that if you have done your job well, the machinery should run without you. He once made the statement to one of the employees, he said, your job is to teach the next person down the pecking order how to do your job. And then he said, and then I want you to cock up your, you know, feet on the desk and figure out ways to make money for Standard Oil. So
that's a pretty remarkable perspective.
Yeah, no, he really, I think that modern management types who looked at his career would be quite impressed. He was also a very inspirational leader. The world may have hated him. His employees loved him, and it was very much...
The world did hate him.
Yeah, but it was not unlike what one reads about Bill Gates and Microsoft, that everyone at Microsoft feels that they're working for Bill and have to live up to Bill's standards. There was a lot of that feeling at Standard Oil.
Mentioning that, it seems that there are some remarkable parallels, mm-hmm. Both in terms of the timing, 1890s, 1990s, in terms of the accumulation of wealth and power, and the way that power is exercised. between, you know, it's almost as if, again, going back to Rockefeller, not only invented the 20th century, but we haven't done much to build on that in terms of the way we run our businesses.
Well, I think that one big change that has occurred in business has changed a little bit in recent years is that, you know, Rockefeller came from an age where these were not publicly traded corporations, mm-hmm. and Standard Oil was listed on the American Stock Exchange, but it was very, very closely held. And so the company was not being managed for the stockholders because Rockefeller did not want to have to answer to the stockholders. He did not want to have to disclose information publicly. As the 20th century has progressed, we have had, you know, the vast majority of the economy is in the hands of companies that are publicly traded and often held hostage to the stock market and the money managers and the mutual funds. What we've seen in the last 10 or 15 years, which has been very interesting, and I think it's the reason that people see parallels between my biography and the present, is that we are again in an age of the entrepreneur-founder. With high tech and the internet and biotech and lots of Wall Street startups, we suddenly again have large in telecommunications and innovations in entertainment media. We again live in an economy where there are, for the first time in many decades, a lot of entrepreneurs who are rolling up major new fortunes based on new technologies and new industries. And so, as a result, we have figures like Gates, who have tremendous fortunes that are based on the stock in their company, or fortunes based on selling out a company that they started. And I think that this is where the industrial age and the information age begin to parallel each other.
There's also an interesting intermediate condition, and I don't know of any parallels. I'm curious. There are also a lot of corporate executives who are not entrepreneurs and who are making the kinds of money that mm-hmm. Rockefeller made, that that are essentially paying themselves very well, and their boards of directors are, of course, validating these.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a curious, it's sort of a middle ground between the entrepreneur and just the yeah. routine, the manager who is managing solely for the benefit of the shareholder.
Incidentally, Rockefeller, who certainly had his quota of greed, I think would have been amazed by the salaries that corporate executives pay themselves today. He decided his salary was always very, very nominal. It was really tiny, because he decided that he should make his money off the appreciation of Standard Oil stock. And I think that, he felt that managers should not be squeezing the company. The company shouldn't be managed for the shareholders. I think that in terms of some of the compensation packages that CEOs are paying themselves and the deals that they arrange for themselves when they sell the companies, and again, companies that they manage, not companies that they own. I think that he would just have found that obscene, some of the stuff.
Coming from Rockefeller,
about saying something. Yeah, because he was no stranger to greed himself,
Well, it's interesting you say that, because, one of the outstanding characteristics, just reading through the thing that comes up over and over, both as a positive and negative, is his absolute focus on the importance of money. I mean, it seemed to be a major metric in his life, his God and his money. Yeah. And in some ways, they seem to overlap.
Yeah, everything in this man's life revolves around money. Even when his image changes after he hires Ivy Lee in 1914, he gives out dimes. I always found that very
Ivy Lee being
strange.
More or less the first PR person.
I find it very strange that in order to change his image as Mr. Moneybags, he goes around handing out dimes. And it works, and people find it charming and lovable. It would have been the last thing in the world I would have suggested that he do to change his image.
Because it makes him look cheap, right?
Huh? Well, also
it
kind of reinforces
his own money. Yeah,
yeah. He's so rich that he can give away money. And in fact, even within his household, he created his own little household economy. Where he would pay the children 2 cents for every fly they killed, or 10 cents for sharpening the pencil. He can only think, even in his family life, he thinks of everything as a sort of miniature economy. So he's the ultimate market man who sees everything in terms of that exchange.
In some sense, we started talking early on about the contradictions in his life.
Yeah.
In some ways, it seems there's a remarkable almost pathological consistency. If you take the Calvinist / Puritan background from which he came, in some ways he is almost obsessively, compulsively consistent with those perspectives, isn't he?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There's some ways in which his personality changes in the most remarkable way. He goes from this somber young man with these almost dead eyes, and then he becomes this kind of lighthearted, jaunty, almost goofy old guy in later years, so that there are ways in which he changes remarkably. But then there are these bedrock principles that are just almost fanatically embedded in the man in terms of money and economy. And so that even when he's in his 80s and 90s, he still is haggling over bills with tradesmen. Going through his papers, it seemed like virtually every time he ever consulted a doctor, he protested the bill.
This is John D. Rockefeller we're talking about. We're going to be back in just a moment with Ron Chernow. Please be with us when we come back.